situation truly is. She moved slowly as she spoke, catching the eye of each mage in turn, letting them see her earnestness. Khadgar, she suspected, was inclined to agree. Carlane was harder to read, as was Ansirum, and they both regarded her with folded arms and blank expressions. The Horde has destroyed Northwatch Hold. Not only did Garrosh Hellscream amass an army of all Horde races, but his shaman used dark magic to control and direct molten giants, unpredictable and violent fire elementals. The use of such coercion could trigger an event similar to the Cataclysm, if the elements grow sufficiently angry. On to Madeira, who gave her the slightest of smiles, and the helmeted Aethys, who stood as still as if he had been carved out of stone. They have set their sights on Theramore. We have a strong defense, and King Varian Wrynn has agreed to send us support in the form of the 7th Legion's naval fleet.
Then why, asked Carlane, do you need our aid? Theramore is a military city of no little reputation, and surely with the fleet you will be able to send the Horde back to their lands, blushing with shame.
Aethys's head turned at the comment, but the Blood Elf Archmage did not speak. Because the Horde is amassed and ready to march, Jaina said, and His Majesty's fleet is yet a few days away. She turned and spoke directly to Aethys. I would prefer a meeting of minds to a clash of swords, but I must defend my people who trust me to protect them. I would not fight the Horde, but I will if I must. It is my most sincere hope that if the Kirin Tor agrees to aid Theramore at this time, when it is so very vulnerable, we can turn this potential attack into an opportunity to create peace.
For all your years of diplomatic service, Jaina Proudmoore, said Aethys in a silky voice, you know little of the Horde if you think they will stop when they see victory.
Perhaps they will stop if they see Magi from the Kirin Tor, Jaina retorted. Please, there are families in Theramore. I will defend them with my life, as will the soldiers quartered there. But we might not be enough. And if Theramore falls, so well might Kalimdor. Nothing would then stop the Horde from attacking Ashenvale or Teldrassil and driving the Night Elves out of their ancient lands. Garrosh wishes the entire continent, and, with respect, that cannot possibly be what the Kirin Tor wishes as a whole. Not if it truly believes in neutrality.
We understand the situation, said Carlane. You do not need to tell us our business.
I do not seek to, Jaina said. But I am counting on your wisdom to see that this is not asking you to take sides. This is asking you to save innocent lives and keep a balance that is already too tentative. An unseen signal must have passed between the other magi, for as one, all of them stepped back a pace.
Thank you, Lady Jaina, said Ronan, in a voice that was clearly a dismissal. We will speak and ask the opinions of others ere we decide. I will notify you when we reach an agreement.
There was the hum of another portal opening, and Jaina stepped through it onto the almost too clean cobblestone streets of Dalaran, feeling like a little girl who'd been told to go tidy her room if she wished to have supper. She was unused to being dismissed, but reasoned that if anyone had the right to do so, it was the Council of Six. She started to cast a teleportation spell back to Theramore, but paused in mid-motion. There were two people she should see while she was here. After Jaina had departed, the other five members turned expectantly to Ronan. Before any of them could speak, he lifted a hand.
We will reconvene in an hour, he said. But we're all already here, said Madeira, slightly puzzled. I have some precedents I'd like to check out, said Ronan. I might suggest the rest of you do the same. Whichever way we decide, to aid Theramore or stand back and let the Horde come, it's a big choice. I'd like more than my own opinion before I cast my vote.
There were a few sour faces, but they nodded. Ronan teleported himself back to his chamber and stood there for a moment, his red brows knitting together. Then he strode over to his desk, nearly every inch of it covered in blank parchment, scrolls, or books, and waved a hand. The messy pile floated upward and remained about 3 feet off the desk. The desk's top flipped open to reveal a small, simple box. What was inside, however, was anything but simple. Ronan removed the box, closed the desk's top, and allowed the parchment, books, and scrolls to return to their various positions. He took the box to a chair and sat down with it.
"Old friend, it is at times like this that I miss you more than I can say," he said. "But I must admit, it's comforting to hear you speak to me beyond death, even if you have to do it in riddles."
He unlocked the box with a small key he kept around his neck and thoughtfully regarded the small pile of scrolls. Each one was a prophecy from Coriolstras, the late consort of Alexstrasza, the Lifebinder. The visions had come to him over the years, and when he had bequeathed them to Ronan, saying with a grin,
"This may help explain how, at times, I appear so damned clever,"
Ronan had been humbled. He had asked Ronan to keep the knowledge of the prophecies hidden, and upon Ronan's death, he was to leave the key to one person he trusted.
"They must not fall into the wrong hands," Crassus had warned him.
That night, Ronan had stayed up until the small hours of the morning, reading through all the prophecies. And there was one in particular he wished to consult now.
"I take it back," he said aloud. "Why did you have to write these in riddles, Crassus?"
He was sure that somewhere the great red dragon was laughing. It was only the second visit Jaina had paid the Sparkshine family. The first time she had come to take their daughter to a faraway land. They had been fairly bursting with pride for Kindi, but Jaina could easily see that the family was tightly knit, perhaps because it consisted only of the three of them. The parting had been hard, but Jaina had been welcomed, not as an intruder depriving them of their daughter, but as a long-lost relative to be received with open arms. Even so, she now hesitated at the door. Coming here had been an impulsive decision. Jaina felt that she owed it to her apprentice's parents to let them know, first and foremost, how impressed she was with Kindi's abilities. And, second, to inform them that that impressive, beloved girl was about to be put in harm's way. Steeling herself for the encounter, she knocked on the door. As she remembered what happened, a smaller door, inlaid into the main one, squeaked open. An elderly, purple-clad mage peered out, around, and then up. "Good afternoon, Mage Sparkshine," Jaina said, smiling. At once, he whipped off his pointed hat and bowed deeply.
"Lady Proudmoore!" he exclaimed. "What brings you to?"
His eyes widened slightly.
"Our little Kindi is well, I trust."
"Quite well, and performing her apprenticeship duties admirably," Jaina said. Both comments at this moment were utterly true. "Might I come in?"
"Oh, certainly, certainly!"
Wendell Sparkshine ducked back inside and closed the door, and then the main door opened to admit Jaina. The tidy little apartment was, as far as Jaina was concerned, decorated in perfect miniature. The ceiling was high enough for her to stand erect, but it would have been impossible for her to sit in the tiny chairs. Fortunately, Wendell was already pulling out what he referred to as the
tall folk chair. "There you are. Sit yourself right down by the fire here."
Jaina looked at the hearth, but said nothing. There were logs arranged, but they remained unlit. She smothered a smile. It was an old joke with the Sparkshine family, and she had no intention of spoiling it. Wendell pretended to gasp.
"Why, that fire is not lit!" he exclaimed.
He withdrew a wand, muttered something softly, then flicked the tip of the magical tool toward the hearth. At once, a bright blaze sprang up, adding even more cheer to the already pleasant scene. A lovely smell wafted from the kitchen, and a gray-haired female gnome, her face smudged with flour, peered out.
"Window, who was it at— Why, lady," she said. "What a surprise. Give me just a moment to get these pies into the oven, and I'll be right with you."
"Take your time, Mrs. Sparkshine."
"I told you when we met, it's Jaxy, or no apple tarts," was the gentle reproof.
For the first time in what felt like years, Jaina laughed. She sat in the comfortable and appropriately sized chair and appreciatively accepted some tea and pastries. Windle and Jaxy sat in their own appropriately sized chairs and made idle chit-chat for a while. Finally, Jaina put down her cup and looked at them. "Your daughter," she said, "is doing a fine job." "No," she said, amending that. "A tremendous job. She impresses me more every day. I'm sure once her training is completed, she'll impress everyone else. Many apprentices have potential. Not all of them live up to it." The couple beamed and turned to each other, clasping hands.
"She's our only one, you know," Windle said. "I'm sure you haven't noticed, but I'm getting up in years."
It was said with a twinkle in his eye. The long white beard gave him away.
"Jaxy and I had all but given up hope of having a child. Kindy's our little miracle."
"We do worry about her all the way over there in Theramore," Jaxy said. "But we appreciate that you let her come visit us so often."
"You must be teasing me," Jaina said, "considering that every time she comes back, she brings us all some of your pastries. I'd send her to you daily if I could spare her." They all chuckled. It was so serene, sitting in this cozy, old-fashioned room next to a blazing fire. Jaina wished with all her heart that it could remain so simple and so untroubled by thoughts of the danger Theramore was facing.
"Oh, Lady Jaina," said Jaxy. "What unhappy thought makes you so sad?"
Jaina sighed. Much as she might wish otherwise, these good people had a right to know that their daughter was in danger. "Theramore is in need of aid from the Kirin Tor," Jaina said quietly. "It was actually Kindy's idea that I come here and ask for help. More, I cannot tell you, but I fear I'm going to go home empty-handed."
"What kind of—"
Jaxy began to say, but Windle laid a wrinkled hand over hers and squeezed it.
Now, Lady Jaina has an awful lot going on," he said. "If she can't tell us, well, that's good enough for me."
"And me, of course," said Jaxy.
Her other hand crept over to hold her husband's.
Is Kindy..."
"Kindy has been working tirelessly, and her aid is invaluable," Jaina said. "I give you my word, I will keep her as safe as I possibly can. After all," and she tried to keep her voice light, "I've invested a great deal of time into training her. I'd hate to have to start all over again with a new apprentice, all wet behind the ears."
"Don't you fret about the Kirin Tor," Windle said, trying to reassure her. "They wouldn't just leave you hanging out there alone in Theramore. They'll do the right thing. You'll see."
They loaded her down with hugs, the fondest of wishes, and a bag of various boxed pastries. So confident and cheerful were they that Jaina began to think that maybe, just maybe, this particular trip to Dalaran would yield fruit. Chapter 13.
"I suspect, little Miss Apprentice," Kallik said, as he stared at the small pieces on the table, "that you are intimately familiar with the nuances of this game."
Kindy's large eyes grew even larger, in feigned innocence.
"Me? Oh, hardly. Turvash only taught it to me last week."
The dragon lifted his blue gaze from the game pieces on the board and quirked an indigo eyebrow. Her expression dissolved into a grin.
Well, she said, there might be a reason no one else will play with me anymore.
So I'm simply fresh blood? Kindi said noncommittally.
Kallik was just about to move the knight when he heard the familiar sound of a teleportation spell. He turned, the game forgotten, as Jaina materialized in her parlor. She was smiling, an expression Kallik had not often seen on her face, and he said a silent thanks to whoever or whatever had caused it.
Your parents, Jaina said to Kindi, are the nicest people in Azeroth, and the most generous.
She handed Kindi a box of pastries from the bag. Kindi opened it to reveal a staggering variety. Small cakes, individual pies, eclairs, puffs, all manner of delicious-appearing delights.
So, how did it go?
Asked Kindi, taking a bite of something frosted and divine-smelling. Jaina's expression sobered. She slipped into her own chair and poured some tea.
Not well, she confessed. But I think I did manage to change a few minds. Don't look so downcast, she added, as Kindi slumped a bit in her seat. They haven't given me their decision on it yet, which means there is going to be more debate and discussion. The tide may yet turn. Regardless, it was a good idea, Kindi.
It would be a better idea if a whole bunch of the Kirin Tor had come back with you, Kindi said.
I cannot argue that point, Jaina replied. But I will take what I can get. And what I can get are berry pastries.
I'm glad to see that you do not feel that all of the sweetness has gone out of the world, Kallik said, helping himself to one. But I regret that the meeting was not more positive.
Jaina waved a sugared hand.
I will not worry until I hear one way or the other, she said. But I would not object if you had some good news about the situation here.
If only I did, Kallik said, meaning the words with his whole heart. The Horde continues to wait on our doorstep, careful not to advance. And, unfortunately, the focusing iris is still on its tour of Kalimdor, at speeds that astonish me.
Kindi was watching them both as she ate her pastry, and her eyes narrowed thoughtfully.
I think I'll go finish this upstairs in my room, she said. There's a book there I've been meaning to get to. I might learn something that could help.
She placed her tea and pastry on a tray and, with no further word, trundled off. Jaina raised a golden eyebrow and her forehead furrowed in confusion.
What do you think that was all about? She asked.
I've no idea, responded Kallik.
It was not entirely the truth. He did have a suspicion as to why the gnome wished to leave the two of them alone, but he had no desire to dwell on it. She turned to him, eyeing him curiously.
Why are you here, Kallikos of the Blue Dragonflight?
For no reason he could understand, the question made him uncomfortable.
I'm looking for...
The focusing iris, I know. That may be what brought you here, but why do you stay?
You could pick any place in the continent to wait for the focusing iris to slow and stabilize, yet you linger here.
Kallik felt heat rise in his cheeks. It was a simple question. Why did he linger here, rather than seek silence in the wilderness?
He could sense the magical object he'd come in search of easily enough elsewhere. Yet here he stayed, learning to play chess with a gnome, discussing military tactics with a night elf, the nature of the arcane with Tervosh and... Jaina. He stayed because of Jaina.
She was looking at him expectantly, one slender hand tucking a stray lock of golden hair behind her ear, her head tilted in a quizzical expression, that distinctive furrow of curiosity creasing a brow that was otherwise remarkably unmarred for a human of her age. She wanted an answer, and he could not give her one. At least, not one that was true. And as he opened his mouth for a glib fabrication, he found he did not wish to lie to her.
There are several reasons, he said, looking away.
Jaina leaned forward.
Oh?
Well, you are a master of magic among your people, Jaina. I feel comfortable with you. Maybe I want to stay with the younger races because my people persecuted yours. With no real right to do so, other than a vaguely worded statement about being the minders of magic. So very many died in the Nexus War, among both Dragonkind and the younger races. They died needlessly and brutally.
His blue eyes met hers, and this time it was she who had to look away.
I suppose I feel I owe it to you to help. And...
He smiled a little, knowing that this much, at least, was true.
You're good company.
Oh, I doubt that, Jaina said.
I don't.
His voice was soft, and he realized it trembled. He wanted to place his hand over hers, but did not dare. Caligos was himself unsure of what drove this interest in Lady Jaina Proudmore, mage. He needed to know exactly what he did feel, and why, before he even ventured to inquire if she felt the same way.
Probably not, he thought.
Malagos had been responsible for starting the Nexus War. His goal had been to direct arcane energy away from everywhere but his own realm. It was good-hearted enough of her to seem to want to be his friend. He didn't want to risk asking for anything more, especially now, with an attack poised to happen right on her doorstep. Well, there's no accounting for taste, Jaina said flippantly. Kallik felt a surge of anger at whoever or whatever had made her think so disparagingly of herself. Was it Kaelthas? Arthas? Her father, whom she had so bravely stood against when all logic and all emotion doubtless cried out that she should not? There was a sorrow in her eyes, one that had not come from news of imminent battle, a sorrow that had been there since the moment he arrived, a sorrow he longed to chase away. She needed him right now. The Kirin Tor would likely turn their backs on her, abandon Theramore to fall beneath the wave of orc, troll, tauren, forsaken goblin and blood elf. In his mind's eye, he saw Jaina standing alone, wielding startlingly powerful magic, her strong face all the more beautiful in her fierce determination to defend her city. But all the skill in the world, if wielded only by a single person, could not stand against such odds. Theramore would fall, and Jaina with it. He opened his mouth to speak, but at that moment he sensed a slight tingling of magic in the air. Jaina's eyes widened, and she leaped to her feet, hurrying to tap the three books in their special order. The bookcase slid back to reveal the mirror pulsing with mist. Speak, Jaina said, in a voice tremulous with hope. At the command, the mist in the mirror took on the shape of a human male face. Archmage Ronan.
You are a very persuasive woman, lady, said Ronan. While the Kirin Tor feels very strongly that we should remain impartial, your plea moved us to action. Even Aethys Sunreaver voted in favor of rendering aid. It seems that to not assist you against such tremendous opposition would be to tacitly support the Horde. At least, that's the logic he used.
Please tell Archmage Aethys that his logic is deeply appreciated, Jaina said. Her slim body was quivering as she forcibly kept her composure. She looked as though she was struggling not to leap for joy. Kallik knew he wanted to.
I and several others will be arriving shortly to lend our assistance in the defense of Theramore. I stress the word defense. We will protect, but we will make no offensive moves. Our greatest hope is that our presence will serve as a deterrent. Is this fully understood?
Quite fully, Archmage. It is my hope as well that somehow we can find a peaceful solution. Ronan sighed, dropping his formerly stern mien.
I suspect we're all just whistling in the dark, but we'll be damned if we sit by and twiddle our thumbs. Expect us shortly.
The image faded. There was a final swirl of magical blue mist, and then the mirror placidly reflected only Jaina and Caligos. Jaina sagged with relief. Thank the light, she murmured. They will get here in time, even if... She shook her head, as if to chase away the negative thought that Varian's fleet might not arrive in time. She smiled radiantly, and Kallik's heart jumped in his chest. He wanted to speak, but he couldn't. The inner voice, of wisdom or fear, he knew not which, spoke and said, "No, not now. Perhaps not ever." Kallik was aware of what he had to do, for both of them, and the knowing was like a knife in his gut.
"I am very glad indeed," he said. "They will protect Theramore as well as I could. Perhaps better."
Some of her exuberance subsided. "Could?" she asked. He nodded.
"Yes," he said. "You have reminded me of a duty I must perform. Now that I know you have allies, I am going to do another sweep of the continent to see if perhaps I can close in on the focusing iris."
"I see. Of course, that's an excellent idea." She smiled briskly, and the sorrow returned to her eyes, doubtless because she felt that he was abandoning her.
"Which I am," he thought sickly. "But it is for her own good."
He knew if he stayed, he'd be unable to refrain from speaking his heart. And that would be a burden Lady Jaina Proudmoore most certainly did not need as she faced what could be Theramore's darkest hour. As he had told Jaina, Archmage Ronan and others of the Kirin Tor would protect her, as well as he could, and none of them was in danger of distracting Jaina from what needed to be her pure, focused purpose.
"I suppose this is goodbye, then," Jaina said.
She smiled, the sincere yet practiced smile of the diplomat, and extended her hand. Kallikgos took it, closing his fingers around her slender ones, savoring the simple handshake for what it surely must have been, the last time he would be able to touch her.
"You're in good hands," he said.
"The finest in Azeroth," Jaina said cheerfully. "I wish you every success, Kallikgos. I know you will find what you are seeking. For your flight, and for the whole world. Perhaps, after the battle, if you do not find it, I can be of further help." He swallowed hard, then let her hand fall.
"After the battle, if I do not find it, you shall be the first to know," he said sincerely.
Kallikgos strode with more energy than was warranted out of the tower and into an area clear enough for him to transform. He leaped into the sky, extending his senses, willing the cursed focusing iris to slow, to stop, so that he could recover it and return to Jaina. But it would not cooperate, and its rapid speed taunted him as he flapped his wings and sped off in what was probably futile pursuit. Jaina was surprised at Kallik's rather abrupt departure, and realized that she'd assumed he would stay and help. But it was not his battle, she reasoned. He probably had already intervened much more than he had originally intended. Charming as he was in his half-elven form, he was, in the end, a dragon. And the dragons did not take sides in the affairs of the younger races. Still, she felt an odd sense of loss. He had become a friend during these tense few days, and she would miss him more than she had expected. She did not have time to brood on his absence, however, as Ronan, true to his word, materialized outside Jaina's tower a scant half-hour after he had contacted her. And also true to his word, he did not come alone. With him were nearly a dozen others, four of whom Jaina knew to be prominent members of the Kirin Tor, if not members of the council. The rest of the Magi she did not know, but she certainly recognized Varisa Windrunner. Clearly, she was not going to let her husband be put in harm's way without standing beside him. Jaina gave her a welcoming smile and turned to the Magi. The four premier Magi Ronan had selected were Terry Cog, one of the foremost gnome Magi in Dalaran, Amara Leeson, a human mage with long black hair and a pinched-looking face whose cross-expression belied a kind heart. Thodor Windermere, whose massive physical build and roughed-up features would make one think he was a warrior, rather than one of the deftest spellcasters Jaina had ever met. And, to her surprise, Thalen Songweaver, a sun reaver, slender, sharp-featured, and with hair the color of moonlight.
"I know many of you, and look forward to getting to know the rest," Jaina said warmly. "And I thank you from my heart for answering my call for aid. Mage Songweaver, I especially thank you for being here. The choice must have been difficult for you and for Archmage Aethys."
"Not as much as you would think," said Songweaver in a husky, pleasant voice. "It was my Lord Aethys who cast the deciding vote. Even after being married to an elf, their logic still confounds me," said Ronan.
Varisa gave him a mock glare. Ronan winked at his wife, then turned back to Jaina.
"Well, here we are. I need to speak with you privately, Lady Proudmoore, but my colleagues here await instruction."
"Let us say rather requests," Jaina said, turning to Turvash. "Turvash, Kindi, Paind, will you acquaint our guests with the layout of the city and introduce them to Captain Vimes and Captain Evencane?" Paind merely nodded. Turvash said,
"It would be an honor. We are most grateful for your aid."
Kindi looked a little stunned, and, for once, seemed to have nothing to say. Jaina watched the group go, then turned to Ronan.
"You realize you've irritated a lot of magi," Ronan said without preamble.
"I?" Jaina was confused.
I know. That's usually my area of expertise,"
the red-haired archmage said with a self-deprecating grin.
"Some people like to hold grudges. I won't go so far as to say you made enemies during the Third War, but your choices didn't endear you to very many."
"What did I do?"
"It's more what you didn't do. Some in Dalaran feel you abandoned them. When you chose not to work with the Kirin Tor, but struck off on your own."
"I wasn't needed there," Jaina replied. "I had a different, well, calling. I went where I felt I could best serve. I had no idea other magi felt insulted by that choice."
"It's old grumbling, nothing more," Ronan told her. "Some people just like to be cranky. And the main reason it still doesn't sit right with a few of them is because there were more than a few magi who thought that you should have been the future of the council, not a smart-mouthed redhead."
At her shocked expression, he added,
"Come now, Jaina. I've heard you say often enough that it's as much a mistake to downplay one's talents as it is to inflate them. I'm good. Damn good. And so are many others in the Kirin Tor. Some of those are here today. But you..."
He shook his head admiringly.
"You're a fine diplomat, no question. Azeroth owes a lot to you. But even I think you may be squandering your gifts, staying here in Theramore."
"Theramore is a nation, one I founded to shine out as a beacon of hope for peace in this world, one I have promised to take care of and protect. I would be but one of many in the Kirin Tor. Here..." Jaina gestured at the activity all around them. "I can't leave, not now, and probably not ever, Ronan. You know that. Theramore needs me. And whatever you say, I cannot believe that I could better serve Azeroth as one of many magi in the Kirin Tor than I have as a diplomat." He nodded, a bit mournfully, it seems to her.
"You are Theramore," he said in agreement. "More than I or anyone can be the Kirin Tor. This world is in a sad, sad state, Jaina. It's not been allowed to recover. First, the war against Malagos and the Blues, then fighting that Bas... forgive me, the Lich King, cost so many lives. And then Azeroth itself practically cracks in half. No disrespect to your efforts, but I don't think that either the Horde or the Alliance would know what to do with peace if it bit them."
Jaina knew that Ronan did not mean his comments as a criticism. He was merely lamenting, as did she, the fact that Azeroth and its denizens had been forced to endure so many catastrophes, so much violence. And yet, what he said galvanized her, as it struck far too close. Was she wasting her time? Hadn't she said as much to Goel, not so long ago, that she feared her words were falling on deaf ears? What she said came back to her.
It seems as if I'm struggling through mud, simply to be heard, let alone actually listened to. It's difficult to try to be a diplomat and work for real, solid results when the other side won't acknowledge reason anymore. I feel like a crow cawing in the field. I wonder if it's just wasted breath.
Caligos, too, had expressed the same thing.
Why are you not in Dalaran? He had asked her. Why are you here, standing between swamp and ocean, between horde and alliance?
Because someone has to, she had answered.
And because she believed she had the ability to succeed as a diplomat.
If you believe that, and I am not saying you are wrong, why are you trying so very hard to convince yourself?
Had she been doing the wrong thing in the wrong place? Jaina forced the thought back. Now was not the time to get lost in regrets. Now was the time to act, to defend her people from the battle that was quite literally on the horizon.
I must see my people safe first, she said to Ronan. Not even I can talk of peace while they are in harm's way. Let's go.
Chapter 14. The sun set, red and swollen. The troll and the tauren, fur and skin seemingly bloodied by the hue, made their silent, steady way up the hill to the ruins of Northwatch Hold. There was no alliance there anymore, not even corpses. Garrosh Hellscream now slept in a tower, once occupied by an admiral, and it was he whom the troll and tauren sought. Garrosh was in a good mood. The evening campfires for cooking, warmth and light, were already lit. Garrosh was happy for any Alliance spies to see how many of the horde they would be facing, and put no limits on how large the fires blazed or how numerous they were. A haunch of zevra roasted over one such fire now, turning on a spit and rendering both fat that sizzled as it dripped and a mouth-watering scent as it cooked.
"Let them come forward," Garrosh said expansively to Malkrok. "They are the leaders of their people. Vol'jin, Bane, come join me. Tear off some of this delicious meat for yourselves."
The tauren and the troll glanced at each other, then stepped forward. Each had a knife, and sliced off and speared a chunk of the dripping flesh. A cask of cherry grog was passed around, and they drank politely.
"Now," said Garrosh, "to what do I owe the pleasure?" "War chief," said Bane, "your people sit and await your orders. Their blood burns with a fire for battle. You know our feelings on this matter. We come openly, imploringly, to tell you that you must strike soon, or the Alliance will have time to prepare a defense."
"I thought you liked the Alliance, Bane Bloodhoof," drawled Garrosh.
His small, dark eyes were sharp and alert, contradicting his languorous pose.
"You know where my loyalties lie," said Bane,
his voice dropping almost to a growl.
"I have no wish to lead my braves into a battle where they will be slaughtered, not when I can lead them into one in which they will be the victors."
"You share this opinion," stated Garrosh, turning to Vol'jin.
The troll spread his arms.
"You heard us before on this, war chief. My people be ready to taste Alliance blood. They get impatient if you keep holding them back. The Forsaken might be fine with patience and all, but I gotta ask you, what you be thinking? You be a great warrior. You not be afraid of them Alliance. So why we not be striking now?"
"You are right. I am a great warrior, and I know more than a little of strategy," Garrosh replied. "I am growing very weary of your questioning my wisdom in this matter."
Gone was the cheerful, relaxed pose. Garrosh had neither drunk too much nor feasted too much. His eyes were fixed upon them intently.
We do not question, said Bane carefully. We too are warriors of no little repute. We too understand the need for tactics. We are offering our advice, dearly bought with the blood of our people, in an effort to prevent unnecessary bloodshed, and we urge you to listen to us.
Bane took a deep breath, rose, strode to Garrosh, and knelt before him. The gesture of obeisance rankled, but it was genuine. He needed Garrosh to listen. His people, nay, the entire horde, needed it.
The Tauren and the Trolls have ever been friends to the Orcs, he said. We admire and respect your race. You are War Chief of the Horde, Garrosh Hellscream, not just War Chief of the Orcs.
He let his gaze move to the imposing figure of Malkorok, standing beside Garrosh, his arms folded across his massive gray chest as he stared balefully at Bane.
You lead us, all of us. You are too smart to be ignoring our advice on this. We do not understand why you seem to wish to listen only to this Black Rock Orc.
Malkorok growled low and took a step forward. Garrosh raised a hand, and the other orc paused in mid-stride.
I need you to get a message to the Blood and Thunder, and the other vessels gathered just outside of Theramore Harbor, he said,
his eyes not on Malkorok, but on Bane.
Tell them that I have new orders for them.
Bane and Fulgen exchanged hopeful glances. Perhaps Garrosh was finally listening to them. Garrosh smiled around his tusks, and when he spoke, his voice was hard.
Tell the fleet to pull back even farther from Theramore, far enough away that the most sophisticated Alliance contraption can no longer see them. Their presence isn't needed anymore. What?
Vol'jin's question was a strangled cry of disbelief.
My goal has been accomplished. I wanted the Alliance to be aware of the possible threat to their shores.
Slowly, Bane got to his hooves.
You plan to withdraw the fleet, he said,
his voice hollow.
I do,
Garrosh said, also rising. The two stared at each other.
Instead of pressing the attack before Theramore can call in aid, you are withdrawing. Yes. And here we have it, Tauren. Those are my orders.
Are you questioning them?
The moment strung out, tense and silent, save for the sizzle of meat juices dripping into the fire. No one moved, though everyone watching was prepared to.
You are the War Chief of the Horde, Garrosh Hellscream, Bane said finally. You will do as you wish. I only pray to the Earth Mother that when this debacle is all over, there is a horde left.
Before Garrosh could taunt him further, Bane turned and left. Vol'jin was right beside him. As they headed back toward their encampments, they could hear harsh, orcish laughter behind them. The attitude in Theramore was determined and grim. The martial aspect of the city, always present, surged to the forefront. The inn was no longer a place to sit by a fire, enjoying a brew and conversation, but a place where soldiers were quartered, sometimes 8 to a room. Cots even covered the floor of the public areas. Dried beans, grains, smoked meats, and containers of fresh water were stockpiled deep in the heart of Foothold Citadel. A sliver of hope energized the city briefly when the sails of the 7th Fleet were spotted on the horizon. The ships, 20 in all, carried not just Stormwind's finest sailors, but also several generals of no small repute. The air grew almost celebratory when the flagship, the Spirit of Tiffin, docked in Theramore Harbor, followed by the rest of the fleet. Despite the urgency, the Marines of the flagship disembarked with an abbreviated but precise ceremony, moving to the martial rat-a-tat of a drum, so they were lining up facing Jaina, Pained, Tervosh, Kindi, Varisa, and the members of the Kirin Tor. Gathered behind them were the citizens of Theramore, their weary, wary faces relaxing as they cheered the men and women who had come to help defend them. Varian had told Jaina he would send as many as he could, but he had named no names, as he himself was uncertain as to whom he could reach in time. Jaina shielded her eyes from the sun, watching eagerly as Ramrod Strait males and females from nearly all the races of the Alliance strode down the gangplank.
"Marcus Jonathan, General of Stormwind, High Commander of Stormwind Defense," one of the Marines announced.
A large, imposing man, wearing heavy plate mail, moved with surprising lightness from the plank to the dock. His beard and mustache were full, but his red-brown hair was cropped fairly short. He looked simultaneously relaxed and ready to spring into action in a heartbeat. Jaina was not a particularly short woman, but as he stood and extended a hand to her, she felt very small indeed.
"I was the first," King Varian asked, "and the first to accept," he said. "You have done so much for the Alliance, Lady Proudmoore, that it is an honor to be able to assist you."
"Thank you, General," she said. "You bring hope with you." The next two were dwarves. Jaina had never met them, but she knew who they were, and the tragic reason these two particular dwarves were here, and not two others.
"Thada Stoutblow o' the Wildhammer," the first one said gruffly,
saluting her with his hammer rather than shaking her hand.
"Harren Redmane o' the 7th Legion Base Camp," the second said.
"You are both most welcome," Jaina said. "And let me extend my sympathies for the deaths of General Thunderclash and General Marstone." Thaddeus Stoutblow nodded brusquely.
"Aye, the deaths of our superiors were nay the ways we wanted to get our commands, that's for sure."
"But we'll avenge them," put in Redmane. "Happy to come help, lady. Killing hard is killing hard, nay matter where we do it."
Even with the Horde all but camped on her doorstep, she regretted the necessity to fight, and such bloodthirst as the two dwarves displayed pained Jaina. However, she merely nodded and turned her attention to the next general. His hooves clopping gently on the wood of the gangplank, Draenei General Tiras Allan strode toward her. She was surprised, but pleased to see him, especially after the open, if understandable, hostility displayed by the dwarves toward the Horde. Tiras Allan had been present at the historic moment when Lady Liadrin of the Blood Knights had spoken with the Naru Adal, renouncing Kaelthas and choosing to serve the Shattered Sun offensive. He had initially been furious that she would dare approach after all her people had done. Yet Adal had shown forgiveness and compassion, and it had been Tiras Allan who had given Lady Liadrin the tabard of the Shattered Sun. Jaina welcomed the Draenei warmly. Strength and gentleness radiated from him, just as golden light seemed to radiate from his armor as he bowed to her.
"I come to protect and defend," he said. "Word of your great deeds and efforts for peace has reached even Shattrath City, lady."
His voice was musical and deep.
"Theramore must stand. The Horde will not triumph."
No talk of killin' Horde from the Draenei, but his was as firm and earnest a pledge of support as the dwarves had given. "Your wisdom will be most welcome," Jaina said. "It'll be good to have a paladin's light in the battle to come." A purple-skinned, blue-haired night elf stepped out, blinking at the sun. Jaina's eyes widened, and she smiled, welcoming this particular ally, Chandris Feathermoon, General of the Night Elf Sentinels, as a friend.
"Battle, sister," Chandris said, returning the smile gently. "The Archdruid and the High Priestess send me to you with joy, and it is with joy that I and my sentinels come to aid you."
"You and they are most welcome," said Jaina, realizing that if Chandris had brought some of her people, it was likely that the other generals had brought what could be spared of their finest as well. Garrosh was bringing all the races of the Horde to bear on Theramore. They would be greeted in kind.
the last to stride onto the dock of Theramore Harbor, was no general, but a familiar figure nonetheless. Jaina had learned only a short time ago that he had survived the raising of Northwatch Hold. He had been badly injured and fallen unconscious, and the Horde had left him for dead. Her pleasure at seeing him was followed instantly by shock and grief at his appearance. He had not come through the battle for Northwatch Hold unscathed. He had lost an eye and had a jagged scar marring what had once been a handsome visage. As he walked toward her, she noticed that one leg dragged slightly. He saw where her gaze went and her sympathetic expression on her face, and smiled as much as he could with his damaged face. "Admiral Aubrey," Jaina said warmly, hurrying up to him with her hands outstretched in welcome.
"Lady Proudmoore," he said. "I'm alive, and the Horde didn't take my wits. That's all that matters. I'll serve you as best I can."
"As best you can is better than most could serve. I'm so pleased to see you. The Alliance is going to be very glad of those wits, and a first-hand account of the Horde's tactics will be helpful as well." She squeezed his hands and inquired, "Are there any others with..." Her voice trailed off as his expression grew solemn.
"About half a dozen survived, with enough of their body parts left to join me," he said. "And I've news of the Horde fleet as well, which I need to share as quickly as possible."
"Aye, Admiral Aubrey's right," said Thaddeus Stoutblow. "This is nae the time for a cup of tea and idle chatter."
"Agreed," Jaina said at once. "Would that we had time for proper ceremony. Captain Vimes will help familiarize your crews and soldiers with the city and its defenses. Generals and Admiral, please come into the keep. We have a great deal to discuss." A few moments later saw Jaina, the five generals, the five members of the Kirin Tor, Ranger General Varisa, and the single admiral, seated around a large table. Ink, quills, and paper were on hand, as were glasses of fresh water. Not even the dwarves asked for alcohol. All knew that their wits needed to be clear and sharp.
"I bid all of you welcome once again," Jaina said, before anyone else could speak. "Generals, Ranger General, Admiral, the Magi you see before you are respected members of the Kirin Tor, including Mage Thallon Songweaver. They have come to offer their insight and expertise in defense of Theramore."
Marcus Jonathan peered at Ronan.
"In defense," he repeated. "I take it you are still not choosing sides in the coming battle." "It is my hope, unrealized as it is likely to be, that there might not be a battle at all," said Ronan, with a placidness unusual for him.
As muttering began to make its way around the table, he lifted a hand.
"If our presence is an insufficient deterrent to violence, then we will act to defend the city in order to prevent as much loss of life as possible. In the meantime," he smiled, "a few of us have gotten our hands dirty before. Perhaps we can help in the planning." "The light sends aid in all manner of ways, and in all manner of beings," said Tiras Allan calmly, directing the words to the Sun Reaver. "I, for one, welcome your cumulative wisdom."
There were nods, some more blatantly reluctant than others.
"I am relieved that we all realize that we have a common foe," Jaina said. "There are so many years of experience gathered here around this table. I am glad every one of you is here."
Aubrey leaned forward.
"Before we start talking strategies and planning, Lady Jaina, I need to tell you what we saw as we sailed toward the harbor."
Jaina felt the blood drain from her face.
"Let me guess," she said. "Several Horde battleships."
Jonathan frowned slightly.
"You cannot see them from the harbor," he said. "And Theramore's ships stayed close to home, or so we were informed. How did you know?"
"They were here a few days ago, being very careful to stay just inside Horde territory," said Payne. "It appears they never truly left."
"We were more than ready to engage if they had given us even a whiff of provocation," said Jonathan.
but they sat there quite calmly, as if out for a scenic boat ride. They didn't budge.
Stoutblow glowered.
Which I, for one, am vera sorry for.
We had no desire to start this war, Jonathan said, though Jaina didn't miss that he, too, looked as if he wished that the Horde had fired on them, so that the tension, at least, would be broken.
But we will be the ones to end it. They are there, they are armed, and they are just waiting.
Tiris Allen cleared his throat.
If I may, Lady Jaina, word reached us that you were warned about the attack. Do you believe that it might have been a trick? That perhaps Garrosh wants you to think the target is Theramore, when in reality it is elsewhere? There's nae other decent target reachable by land, said Redmayne, scoffing. Seems a wee bit silly to have all them Hardies squatting there for nae reason. The Hard's big, true, but nae that big.
The thought did occur to us, said Chandris. We have seen no evidence that there are plans to attack anywhere other than Theramore. Jaina pondered, then shook her golden head. No, I am certain it was no ruse. My contact risked a great deal to warn me, and I trust him completely. She had sat with Bane while he grieved a father slain by treachery, had seen a weapon sacred to the light glow approvingly in his mighty fist. He would not betray her. The Draenei regarded her, then nodded.
Then we will take this unknown contact at his word. The evidence does appear to support it.
Chandris leaned forward.
Admiral Aubrey, she said, we have had the honor to speak with you during our journey here. Lady Jaina and the others have not. Why do you not tell them what you have shared with us?
She smiled. It was not a pleasant smile. Chandris Feathermoon was a predator, and it was clear that she was ready to begin the hunt.
Then we shall make our strategies.
Jaina took a moment to be grateful to the light, and to Varian Rin, Adal, High Priestess Tyrande, Archdruid Malfurion, Ronan, and the Council of Three Hammers, for the collective wisdom of these battle-hardened men and women. With luck, not only would they withstand the horrid attack, but they would do so with the fewest number of casualties on both sides. Then, when Garrosh Hellscream realized that even his best efforts at violence would not prevail, maybe he would be willing to talk peace.
Earth Mother, give me guidance, Bane prayed silently.
He had come to the little remembrance site, the Tauren equivalent of a graveyard, close to the encampment that the Tauren had passed on their path to Northwatch. He found comfort here, where the benevolent spirits of those who had died might yet linger. The days crawled by as the Horde waited and waited, and the Alliance defenses at Theramore grew stronger by the moment. Bane had heard from Perith and knew that Jaina had received his message with the graciousness and appreciation he had come to expect from the Lady of Theramore. Even so, the warning had been given to prevent a massacre of the Alliance, not so that the Alliance would have a chance to massacre the Horde, which it was shaping up to be. Still, this could not be laid at Jaina's feet. Garrosh, for some unfathomable and alarming reason, seemed content to stay holed up with his Korkron and that Black Rock Orc, while precious moments passed. Word had come that the Seventh Legion's famous fleet had arrived, and that the decks of the flagship were crawling with Alliance generals, whose names ought to have been striking terror into Garrosh's heart. Instead, Bane had heard laughter and bold comments coming from the war chief's encampment, while the dire news was being whispered among the Horde's foot soldiers, who sat awaiting orders. Bane no longer had the heart to even protest Garrosh's delay. At best, he would be taunted and pushed to his limits, then dismissed. At worst, he could be accused of treason and perhaps executed. Bane was a warrior. He was no stranger to tactics and strategy, and knew that what seemed like foolishness sometimes was wisdom. but he could see nothing here that resembled wisdom. Garrosh had attacked Northwatch, and the victory was overwhelming. Had they pushed on to Theramore even a day or two later, a similar victory would have been assured. But instead, Grom's son had waited and let Jaina learn about the planned attack, had let her stockpile food and weapons, had let her receive outside assistance.
"Why?" Bane said aloud.
He thought of his people, steady and solid, and his oath of loyalty to Garrosh.